It's the Book of the Week.
And it's that time of the week again. Yes, it's time for Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself, Laurie Westron, and our guest this week, who is Sue Harper. Sue is an emeritus professor of film history at the University of Portsmouth. She helped to inaugurate the literary studies, cultural studies, and film study degrees there. She has published many books and articles on British cinema. She has appeared widely on radio and television, and since 2020, she has published creative writing exclusively. Sue's work falls mostly into the category of feminine gothic, and in 2020, Aegeus Press published her short story collection, The Dark Nest, which sold out quickly. Her new book, Blood and Coal, the story of a Nottingham mining family, was published in September 2024 by IMD Media, and she has published a number of stories in magazines, and in 2023 was runner-up in the London Independent Story Prize. And Sue, if you'd like to read a bit of blurb about your book for us, put that out there, and then we'll come back with some nice questions for you.
Well, it's a book about my family, but it's highly fictionalised, although it's based on archival sources, and it's trying to deal with the history of consciousness and bring to life people from the past. So each of the characters I describe and talk about their lives, and then I get them to turn back to me and say, "You are rubbish. You got it all wrong," or just occasionally, "Yes, you got me quite right." So it's a way of trying to give the dead a living voice. That's what it's about.
Okay. What are the links, would you say, between your academic writing and your creative work?
I think as an academic, I was always something of a maverick, in that I was always against the grain, as it were. When I was starting out, the main foreground of academic work was theory, film theory, in the 80s, and I didn't want to do that. I worked with archival stuff. But with the academic work, I was always wanting to look at subordinate groups like women and the working class. And the links with that are actually quite powerful to my creative work, because I want to use the sources creatively and I want to be revolutionary in their use, and I want to call attention to the voices or the perceptions of people who were hidden from history, like women.
Yeah. So your work has been characterised as feminine gothic, and could you elaborate on what that actually means?
Yeah, feminine gothic. Well, for start, I need to discriminate between feminine and feminist, because I would say that my work isn't feminist or any in the broadest sense. But feminine gothic essentially is a mode, I think, which concentrates on the body, the female body, and on the dark side of perception. So in my stories, the body is a kind of movable feast, and in one of the stories, the heroine's ears move to the top of her head and she has to make a kind of hat to hide them. And in another story, she has a vagina that learns to talk.
Okay.
Which has actually been is on the wall now at the Vagina Museum in London. And there's another story where the heroine finds a 30-foot penis on a beach. But besides that, the overall mood of the stories is quite dark. That's the gothic side, you know. And they're meant to shake you, to shock you, to make you feel uncomfortable and anxious, really.
Okay, well, yeah. You've given me a copy of the book, and I'll tell you if that works for me later. Is your book, Blood and Coal, is it a departure from your previous work?
It is to a degree, yes, but actually, broadly speaking, it is a continuation, but you can't quite see it. I mean, generally, in my previous work, I've had a protagonist called Sarah, who's a sort of disguised version of me, but this is sort of about my family. And in it, I write about how I came to be, you know, about myself, but it's heavily fictionalized, and it's about looking at the dark side of human nature and human experience, and trying to look at what it was like to be shut out from everything, from education, from the class system. I mean, my family were murderers, thieves, rogues, all that, and I'm trying to give a sense of why that was, how they felt, and being women as well, yeah.
I'm always intrigued as to what inspires an author to write a book. And what was your inspiration for Blood and Coal?
My inspiration for Blood and Coal is remembering what it was like to feel shut out. I mean, I was the first member of my family ever to stay at school beyond 15, and then I got to be a professor in the end, and I wanted to try to explain what gives somebody, I mean, it could be me, it could be anybody, that kind of energy and bloody mindedness, given the intractability of the British social class system.
Okay, and yep. Why is this book set within a mining family in Nottingham?
Oh, well, what they say about fiction, and it is fiction to a certain extent, is you should write what you know. I mean, if I was to really write what I know, I'd do a novel about the university, which I think perhaps I won't do. But I wanted to give us a flavour of the period and a flavour of the place, and then move on from there.
And did you grow up in Nottingham?
I grew up in Nottingham, although I have, of course, been in Portsmouth for far longer than I was in Nottingham, but I left Nottingham at 18, never to return. All my family were miners.
So you would call yourself a Portsmouth writer?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked here for 40 years. I lived here for many of them, although I live in Hayley Island now. And Portsmouth is an extraordinary place for writers.
Certainly is.
And there's the PAC, you know, the Portsmouth Authors Collective. There's loads and loads of reading and performance groups. There's marvellous teachers, you know, like Will Sutton. And I don't think I would have moved into fiction in the way I have had it not been for the stimulus and support of Portsmouth. I've never heard of a town that has so many productive writers as Portsmouth.
Absolutely. I found Portsmouth Authors Collective quite accidentally on Facebook.
Yeah.
Some over 71 versions of this show.
Yes.
Yes.
Gone. Goldmine.
Absolute goldmine. And Laurie kindly accepted my invitation to come and talk to me, and this show grew out of it.
Yeah, yeah. History was there.
It's absolutely amazing. And is your gender and your age an important aspect of your writing?
Oh, it is crucial. I mean, as I said, I see myself as a feminine writer rather than feminist, but I want to try to give a voice to the repressed and often silent aspects of society, which women and, you know, the working class are the most important ones, but also my age. I mean, I'm getting to an age where almost everybody I know is either dead or a little bit challenged, and I'm very fortunate not to be that. But what I wanted to do is to try to make women writers more visible, and to learn from experience, and to be ironic and erotic sometimes, and challenging. And the sort of people that I want to be like are, I don't know, Ursula Le Guin, or, you know, other writers like that, or female artists like Paula Rego, older female artists. Something to aspire to and not to feel embarrassed about.
Let's go back a little bit. So your former book we mentioned earlier, when did that get released?
2020.
So it would just, so you are a recent author.
Yes.
Found that late in life, if I may say that.
Yes.
Which we find a lot of authors that come in and do. And they say, yeah, because we find the time to do it.
That's right. Well, it wasn't so much in finding time to do it. I could always have had the time. I always wanted to do it. But it's a question of being intellectually ripe and emotionally ripe to write the kind of things I wanted to. And also, I felt I had come to the end of my academic writing. I still value it. I still want to do it. But I said what I had to say.
And do you feel as a, if I may say this, as a university professor, do you feel you there's something you mustn't put in a book?
Yes, to a certain extent.
So there's no point me saying what's that going to be then, is there?
Well, no, I can just be a bit general about it. I mean, I suppose being a professor is supposed to carry a burden of respectability and orderliness about it, both of which are qualities that I have no time for. And so I have to, I suppose if I was writing as an academic, I'd be a bit more careful. I mean, I used to have, as an academic, a writing style which was often called juicy, which was more, a little bit more relaxed and casual than much academic
and
stuff.
And doesn't quite fit into the title of Blood and Coal.
No, not absolutely not, no. But also, you know, being outside the academic community allowed you to take more risks with your subject matter. I mean, Blood and Coal is history in that it's based on archive work, but it's also fiction in that I've taken a huge number of risks with the material, and you can't do that as an academic quite.
And does it include some juicy bits?
Yes. Well, yes, indeed, and some forbidden bits, that's right. I mean, my grandfather, for example, pushed my grandmother downstairs and killed her and got married to somebody else four weeks later, something like that. And they were all drunks, you know, all that, you know, and it's that kind of material isn't germane to academic work, because what is important is to think about how people felt in the past, how they acted, and more importantly, how they moved, how they looked, how they used their gaze. And I was trying to reconstitute that in my writing, which is a little bit outside the academic parameters, I would say.
I think you've set the audience up for some expectancy that I look forward to reading that book, yes. And I'm sure some of our audience will as well. How can they get hold of it?
Well, they can look at the Portsmouth Authors Collective website, which has got details of everybody on it. The book can be, it's on Amazon, obviously, and it has sold very well. It has all the reviews, it's had a 5-star. You can get it through Amazon. Or if you contact me through PAC, you can get it without postage from me, if you know.
Yeah, sure, and every little helps. Yeah,
I'm hoping to find a bookshop that will take it. I haven't, you know, been successful so far, but...
I'm sure Laurie can push you in the right direction for that.
She will.
And you also have your own website.
I have my own website. It's www.sueharper.co.uk, and I've also got a YouTube channel, which is
wonderful.
I'm reading the stories, and it's called, this is without punctuation, Sue Harper Short Stories. And you can see me reading some of the juicier stories on there.
I've got to have a look. We're well keen on YouTube at the moment, and
there's a bit of this on the YouTube channel.
We will look it out.
It's Chum. It's the story called Chum on YouTube channel. It's me reading that bit, and so that would be a good taster, a free taster for anybody who wanted to look.
Brilliant, Sue. A nice place to leave it. A lovely chat with you. Sue Harper, talking about your book, Blood and Coal, the story of a Nottingham mining family. I look forward to reading it, and I'm sure our listener will too. Though, before you go, we're going to play the song that you've chosen, which is Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. And back in the room with Laurie Westron from Portsmouth Authors Collective. How are you doing, Laurie?
Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning to you. How was your Christmas?
It was great. Very relaxing. You know, quite a chilled event. But yeah, I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I went out to dinner on Christmas Day. So went to a friend's house for dinner. Mm-hmm. Really, really wonderful not to have to cook for a load of people, which is what I normally do. And thought I enjoyed it until I didn't do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to do the same thing. We used to have a house full of people, and I loved it. I loved having all the people around. But actually, you know, having a more relaxed Christmas.
It's a revelation, isn't it?
It is.
To not have all that responsibility and just look after yourself is quite something. And I think I know what I'm going to be doing with Christmases in the future.
Yeah. We've developed a new tradition. We go for a Christmas Day bike ride, and we have cheese sandwiches for lunch overlooking some beauty spot someplace, and then cycle home and Skype my mother, which is, a must on Christmas Day.
Compulsory.
And then have a nice Christmas meal in the evening. You know, it's much more relaxed.
This Christmas 2024 has brought for me the realization that I can sit down, relax, and watch a movie without distraction.
Good, yeah.
And it's been great. And I've watched quite a few movies, some I would say really, really good, and some not so good. I won't mention any of them, but I've enjoyed doing that. And I'm something I thought, you know what, going into the new year, I'm going to make sure I watch a film or two each week. It's it's a special moment you get to in your mind.
You know, and it's like reading a book, isn't it? It takes you into another place, and it allows you that space and time to forget what is, you know, buzzing around in our heads all the time.
Absolutely.
So.
And I almost forgot we are talking about reading books. So Sue Harper, what a wonderful guest.
Oh, wasn't she? Wasn't she?
Yes, she almost gave more away than I wanted to put on radio. But hey-ho, no, I think she was fabulous. And I also thought off the back of that, we could talk about the difference between memoirs and autobiographies.
Absolutely. You know, I think that both of them can be quite creative. So, you know, I think Sue kind of already has mentioned about, you know, there was a lot of creativity that went into writing her memoir in the way that she did. And I think there's a lot of fictional content in both autobiographies and memoirs. But basically, the difference is an autobiography is looking at a person's whole life, and a memoir is looking more specifically at an event or a time or a particular theme.
Yeah, or moments in time generally.
Yes, yeah.
A question I want to ask, I've wanted to ask an author this, which you are an author, so I've got one in the room I can ask, and you may have written about things that are factual in your life. And is it an exercising moment to actually get it out there? Do you think? So you write something that you wouldn't normally talk about or tell somebody, and you may not have done it, and I'm not asking you to say if you have or haven't, but obviously authors that are prepared to write about their life in a very candid way, mm-hmm. I would have thought it can be an exercising moment where it's out there now. I've said it, I've done it, it's in a book, it's a fact, I feel good about it.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people that is an experience that they have. I think there is something to be said about talking about things we don't normally talk about, and that can, you know, lift a weight from our shoulders.
I think that's a great way of putting it. Just ask an author to answer a question and you'll get the words all in the right way, in the right order.
Well,
Laurie, I'll tell you, so within Portsmouth Authors Collective, do you have memoir writers?
Yeah, we've got a number of people. Bryony Best, of course, you know, we've
of course.
Spoken.
How foolish of me to not to remember.
You know, her first book, Discovering the Key to Happiness and Fulfillment, that was a memoir about her time, you know, coming through the struggles that she had as a younger person.
Goodness gracious. And in her book, isn't she is extremely candid and open about that.
Yes, very much so. And, yeah, far more candid than I could ever be.
Yeah, and I guess that sums up what I was saying earlier, talking about that. So some can, some can't, and some would get a therapy out of it and some wouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Jo Austen. Now, Jo has written three memoirs. So her first book, Tug of Love, is kind of looking at her childhood and you know, her struggles. And then her second memoir, Walking with Love and Autism, is about her life with her son. And so her son is autistic.
Funny enough, I'm currently reading that book.
Right.
And it's not so much an open book, but it's a lovely, lovely version of somebody putting their life out there, bringing up a child with special needs.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jo is such an advocate for working with children who do have special needs and challenging circumstances.
Of course, I did that podcast with her. She's now ambassador to Portsmouth's fostering care.
Yes.
And she's just such an amazing human being, I think a beautiful human being, that is out there with obviously an ex-nurse, so she's got that caring thing instilled in her. And she really came across well at the fact that she wants to help people with special needs, and most of the fostering she does is for autistic kids.
Absolutely, you know, and you know, of course, those are the children that often, you know, find it most difficult to find a home.
Indeed.
And her third book, most recently published, Journey with an Angel, is again about Jo and her...
one of her dogs, wasn't it?
One of her dogs, yeah. Very special dog that helped her to, you know, get through some of the rough times.
As a dog owner, I totally own that. I totally understand it. You often look to your dog when you're in trouble.
Yeah. And Linda Rushby. So I think the last time Linda was in and she was talking to you about her memoir, travel memoir, Single to Circechi, about, you know, kind of abandoning her life here and, you know, seeking a life someplace else in Turkey.
I remember that interview actually, or part of it, and it sort of came across to me as somebody that was chasing something else and looking for something else in life, but certainly somebody with a brave attitude that was prepared to just up and go.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, really inspirational. And so that's her travel memoir, but when she was in, you know, I think Linda was talking about that she's got all this other material that she was not sure if she was going to be able to edit down for a volume 2. And I am very glad to say that she's doing that as we speak.
Oh, brilliant. Amazing.
And, so I'm really looking forward to having that that second memoir from her.
Well, there we go. There's a little bit about memoir and the difference between memoirs and autobiographies, which I guess, you know, they do overlap somewhat.
They do. And I think as well, one of the things that I think Sue touched on is the sometimes fictional qualities, you know. So I think in writing a good memoir, you have to remember that you're writing a story.
Of course. And it's got to be entertaining to the reader.
Yeah. And so you're weaving in, you know, the true bits that you want to reveal, and maybe fictionalizing, you know, other parts, conversations there is a lot of similarity with, writing fiction.
A memory itself evolves in your mind over time.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely.
You know, you can think something today that really wasn't like that at all, but that's how you would tell the story, and we all do it.
Yeah.
Because it grows.
And that's right. If you're wanting to tell a good story, then, you know,
you've got to elaborate.
There's some exaggeration in there and all sorts.
Yeah, so. And the things that authors do to keep you turning the pages.
That's right.
Laurie, as ever, it's been wonderful. Do you know this is PAX 71?
Ooh, I know.
And what have you got coming up for PAX?
Well, we've got a few things coming up. We're not having any markets for the immediate future. And we will start having markets again later on in the spring once things start to warm up. But yes, on the 22nd of January, which is a Wednesday, that will be our first Speak Volumes evening of the year. And that's at the Hideaway Cafe on Highland Road.
And is that easy to find?
It's very easy to find.
It's a Hideaway Cafe.
And you've thrown me off there.
Yeah, so the Hideaway Cafe for
and,
your speakeasy.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity for people to come and hear authors read from their work. Yeah. And then in February, we are also going to have an annual meeting with the wider membership of PAC and start talking about some ways that we might move PAC forward.
Cool. And I wish you all the best with that. And as I say, every week, everything comes to an end. We are, again, past our allotted time. But it's been a pleasure having you in. Is there anything else you need to say?
No, I think that's about it. I guess...
a good place to finish. But other than, I do like your Rupert the Bear scarf.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, this was knitted for me by my sister-in-law, Carol. Carol Westron, yes.
And Carol, another author.
Another serial author.
Laurie, thanks for coming in, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
And Happy New Year, Bob.
And Happy New Year to you.